Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times Supplementary Log. Interviews with the authors and musicians that make Simultaneous Times podcast possible. You've heard the stories and the music. Now hear the stories behind the stories.
Welcome to Simultaneous Times Supplementary Log, an interview with Rudy Rucker. Rudy Rucker is a mathematician, a computer scientist, an artist, and the author of more than 40 books. He worked for 20 years as a professor of computer science in Silicon Valley. He received the Philip K. Dick Awards for his cyberpunk, software, and wetware. Many of his novels are transreal as well. His nonfiction includes The Fourth Dimension and Infinity in the Mind. His most recent books are Return to the Hollow Earth and Million Mile Road Trip. His short stories can be read on his Complete Stories webpage. 9 of his novels were reissued by Nightshade last year. Rudy blogs at rudyrucker.com/blog. What was your first experience with science fiction, and what inspired you to first create work in the genre?
Well, I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and there was a single bookshelf with science fiction books in the Louisville Free Public Library, and I liked reading those. Some of the collections of stories really impressed me. They would be like best stories of 1948 or something, and I just liked how experimental and offbeat some of the stories were. Remember, there was one that started with the ending, and then it had the middle, and then it had the beginning, and the ending looked happy, but when you got to the beginning, you found out it was actually a terrible ending. I don't remember the name of the story. And then my favorite writer is one of my favorite story writers was Robert Sheckley. And I really liked his... I just had this sense, as I got to know him later, and I had this sense, even as a boy, that he was kind of a hipster, a beatnik almost, but he had this way of writing the stories very simply and in a kind of humorous, but not a sort of slobbering humor like you see sometimes, but it was kind of a dry, kind of ironic humor, and I liked that. Then there are writers that weren't exactly science fiction writers. William Burroughs, in a way, is a science fiction writer. I mean, he writes these strange scenarios set in jungles and things, and I loved him. And, of course, later, Thomas Pynchon is also Gravity's Rainbow. Has, in a way, a science fictional quality, even though it's about World War II. So those are some of the writers that got me going.
And today, what are some of your favorite science fiction writers?
Well, my cyberpunk friends, of course. I love William Gibson's writing. I just reread The Peripheral just last month. And I got his new novel, Agency, and that's a direct sequel to The Peripheral. And it's an interesting book. Maybe I like The Peripheral a little better, but Agency is also very cool. And I always like Bruce Sterling does. He's an old cyberpunk crony of mine. We've written, I think, 9 stories together. They came out in a volume called Transreal Cyberpunk. And I'm kind of drawing a blank now on what other science fiction writers to recommend. Mark Laidlaw is good. Paul DeFilippo. The younger writers, well, they're not really young. They're younger than me. Cory Doctorow, his last book was great. The one about Walk Away, that was very cool. And there's a new writer, Christopher Brown, coming up. He's doing some great stuff, too.
So tell us a bit about your writing process and how this process can vary between writing cyberpunk versus transrealism or even nonfiction.
Well, the process is always the same, really. It's just writing. I like to write. It's a craft. I've been doing it, I don't know, for over 50 years, and I've gotten a little better at it. I like it think. And it's something, it's a, kind of almost like a central pleasure to be writing, twisting the sentences around and coming up with the words. And when the writing's going well, it's a little like I'm dreaming. I'm just seeing the things and I'm writing them down. But, of course, unlike a dream, I get to edit it and fix it. And a typical, when I'm in a writing phase, I'm not always in a writing mode. I haven't been writing that much for the last couple of months. But when I'm doing it, well, typically I'll do the email in the morning, of course. Part of writing is avoiding writing. So, and one of the things a writer, some writers learn is there's various destructive ways to avoid writing. You can, you know, get drunk and stoned. And that's, in the long run, that doesn't work so well. I used to admire Kerouac and Poe, and then they died in their 40s, and so they stopped being good role models for me. But typically, I'll do my email in the morning, and then I'll try to get going on something. And what I often do is I mark up what I wrote the day before, and then I'll type in the corrections, and then that'll kind of get me some momentum going, and then I'll start writing some new stuff. Another thing that I do, I always have, if I'm doing a novel, I always have a document called notes for the novel. And then if I'm not up for going right into the novel, then I'll go and write something in the notes. And that way I'm able to do some writing, but it's not as sort of taxing and as exposed as writing the actual book.
So you're also a visual artist. How does working in different mediums inform your writing?
Well, I like painting because it is non-digital. I mean, even typing is sort of digital. So when you're writing a book, although it's not, you know, like writing computer code, but it is, you know, you're putting discrete symbols down. In painting, it's more analog. You're smearing colors around. I never do any logical analysis of how to mix colors, or not much of one. It's more putting them on the palette and scumbling them around until it looks right. And also with painting, well, also with writing, I tend not to have outlines that I rigorously follow. I don't usually have a really detailed sketch for a painting, but sometimes I will. And for a book, I'll have sort of a loose sketch of it, and particularly if I'm trying to get a contract for it before I write it, then you have to send the publisher some kind of outline. But I don't stick to the outline. Getting back to the painting, there's a different part of my brain comes into play when I'm painting, and sometimes I will paint things having to do with the story I'm working on, and then I'll see images that then I can turn around and use in the book later on. So I might not have thought of.
What do you see as themes that will become increasingly important in science fiction?
Well, science fiction right now is entering a phase where a lot of the books are sort of depressing. They're climate sci-fi and apocalypse sci-fi and end of the world sci-fi and social breakdown. It's a sort of dark time, and it's partly because of the political administration we've had for the last going on 4 years. It's sort of depressing. I saw some number somewhere in the paper that depression rates are much higher than they were 4 years ago in the public. And it's partly just kind of, it's sort of a feedback loop. I mean, there are some bad things happening, but then the media amplifies it, and you get more and more bummed out, and then you write about how bummed out you are. And the climate change, it's, you know, kind of frightening how real it's becoming. And I still, when I look at science, we've really done a lot in like the last 50 years even, or 70 years. We really didn't know jack, you know, about pretty much any subject in 1900. And I think it's reasonable to expect that we can see some really very large and startling advances in what our science does in the next 100 years. So I think to say that we're doomed is giving up too easily. I think we are going to find scientific solutions for a lot of the things that are bothering us. So I like the idea of writing science fiction where there's something kind of unexpected is happening. Like a commercial telepathy, a new source of energy from the subatomic level. And the whole biotech thing is, that often is presented as being like a plague, and, you know, we're going to have this, everything's turning into gray goo, and these creatures are eating you. But I think it could be, have some happy results there, where we could see really useful biotech things. In my view, I've written about this in a couple of my books, like in Freck and the Elixir, I had this a lot. Most of the things that we use as kind of devices and machines would, it's not unreasonable to think that those would actually be tweaked living organisms. That instead of a smartphone, you'll have something like a leech that sits on your neck. It's removable, and it can pick up on your brain waves, and it has a little antenna, and it can send the patterns to other people. And you'll have a big seed the size of a pizza, and you can put it in the ground, and it'll grow you a house. I wrote about this also in my book, Saucer Wisdom. It was recently reissued by Nightshade Books. So I'm relatively optimistic about the future, and I think there's a lot of cool science fiction things that we haven't written about. There's a tendency, if somebody's not very imaginative, they just look at Hollywood movies and they think those are all the possibilities there are. But there's just any number of things that haven't been written about yet.
So that brings me to the next thing I wanted to ask. I also think that there's a lot of hope and opportunity, but some science fiction writers I've talked to find writing about the future to be more and more difficult as science and culture move faster than they ever have. Do you find that to be an opportunity for science fiction writers, or do you find it to get more difficult to write about the future?
Well, I think it's a cop-out to say it's harder to write science fiction than it used to be. I mean, it was always hard, you know. In 1980, I started writing about people uploading their minds into robots, and nobody had ever written about that. And it took me like 2 years to think of that. And now, you know, well, they're starting to do things like that. So people are saying, well, like, there's nothing left for me to write about. And that's just silly, you know. So as our zone of knowledge expands, the border of it expands as well. So, you know, if you're lazy and you get your ideas from movies and TV shows, then you can say, oh, it's all been done. It hasn't all been done at all. We're just starting.
So tell us about some of your upcoming artistic endeavors and about your latest book.
Well, my latest novel is called Million Mile Road Trip. And this was picked up by Nightshade Books. They did this really nice thing for me in 2019. They published Million Mile Road Trip, and they republished 9 of my older novels, and it's a uniform edition. They're really nice covers, really nice-looking books. It's something I'd always hoped would happen. It was like a couple of years ago they did, another publisher did an edition of a whole lot of Philip K. Dick's books, and I always thought it would be nice if they did that with my books. I mean, I've got 20 novels out, and it's always a juggling act to keep them all in print. But now there's 10 of them out on the shelves from Nightshade Books, so I'm really happy with that. And with Million Mile Road Trip, that was, at that point, I didn't feel like writing about depressing futures. I just wanted to write a fun science fiction book. Science fiction is, sometimes people dismiss it as escape literature, but I mean, what's wrong with escape? You know, why not? So it's about they're teens, they're like, they're 17 and 18, and they're in California, and they go off on this literally a million mile road trip. They go to a parallel world where instead of the planets being separated by space, they're all kind of next to each other on this huge plane. Each of them is this sort of valley, 2,000, 3,000 miles across. And they just go and go and go, go through 100 of these. That was, to write something that takes so long, that was something I kind of liked about Tolkien there. In Lord of the Rings, if they were going to go from point A to point B, he would burn through a couple of chapters telling them what they saw every inch of the way, practically. And that kind of gave me the courage to write about that long of a drive and have some detail about it. So that's our latest book that's out. Actually a book I wrote after that, but which was published earlier, is Return to the Hollow Earth. That's a different kind of trip of mine. It's sort of an obsession with this theory of the Hollow Earth. And so I have two novels I wrote, The Hollow Earth, 10, 15 years ago. And then I always wanted to come back there, so I wrote Return to the Hollow Earth. And I published them in a single volume. And that was one of the books. It sometimes happens at this point in my career, I can't sell a book, and then I turn around and run a Kickstarter and some publish it in paperback. So those are two to check out, the two most recent ones.
You just heard Simultaneous Times Supplementary Log, an interview with Rudy Rucker. You can find out more at rudyrucker.com. Simultaneous Times is a monthly science fiction podcast going live on the 15th of each month. And now, Simultaneous Times Supplementary Log, interviews with the authors and musicians of the podcast, going live on the 1st of every month. Theme music by Dane Lescombe. Be sure to visit us at our bookstore in Joshua Tree, California, or at spacecowboybooks.com. And out now, Simultaneous Times Volume 1, paperback science fiction anthology, available on our website and on Lulu. Get in touch on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. And now a word from other fellow Joshua Tree podcasters.
Are you looking for a new way to think and transform? Tune into Myth Matters, a biweekly podcast of storytelling and conversation about mythology and why it's important to life today. Find a more creative way to live. Learn more at mythicmojo.com and keep the mystery in your life alive.
Have you ever wondered why people live in the desert? I'm Dawn Davis, and I host Desert Lady Diaries podcast. It's a weekly conversation with women who found their home in the Mojave Desert. Each week, I talk to women who were either born and raised in the desert or felt called to come here and what the desert means to them. You can learn more about the podcast and listen at DesertLadyDiaries.com.
We live in a very weird place. A dry and mountainous land of poisonous creatures and desert monsters, missing tourists, and strange lights in the sky. Join us every Friday at 10 p.m. for a late-night voyage across the mysterious Mojave Wilderness on KCDZ 107.7.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.